am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Happy Monday, everybody. This is Jan with Purpose Talk Radio. And I'm having a little bit of technical issues here, but that's okay. We'll figure it all out. I wanted to let you know that we have a great guest today. We have all kinds of wonderful things happening. And you know what? I think I just lost the card that I pulled for the show today. I told Cindy what it was, and then, and then I lost it. I'll have to find it again. So anyway, let's just start the show. This is Purpose Talk Radio. This is Jan Revell, and it is great to be with you again. Maybe it fell on the floor. Oh, it did. There it is. I found the card. All right, I'll tell you what it is in just a few minutes. So, today we have a special guest, Melanie Barris, with us, and we're going to talk about relational aggression, and we're also going to talk about how you heal from that, the steps that you can take, some concrete ideas that you can take to heal from an abusive relationship. And we're going to continue. This is the third in a six-week series dealing with healing from abuse. So we're glad to have you with us. A little bit of housekeeping. The housekeeping, and Cindy will remind me if I forget anything, thankfully. It's so wonderful to have Cindy here because she really does keep me on track because I tend to get sometimes off track. Can you believe that? That's just amazing. And my friend Marva is sitting here laughing as she heard me say that. So anyway, housekeeping. Our wonderful opening and closing song is called I Am Who I Am. And it's by the group True Trinity. You can find them at truetrinity.com, TRUETRINITY.com. And Cindy, our facilitator here, is a member of that group. So it's a wonderful song. I love promoting it. I love hearing it. And we met because we had we had a contest to come up with a theme song. And this is the song that we chose because it is just so beautiful and it represents exactly what it is that we're doing. I am who I am, walking with the Spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I just love that song. I have to sing along with it whenever I hear. So I have to mute the microphone so that, you know, you don't have to listen to me because I guess it's a little bit off timing. Anyway, that takes care of that. I want you to know that I've drawn three cards today. So if you have a question or a concern and you would like to have me read one of the cards for you, just call in or come in via Skype. I'll give you that number. It's 347-205-9074. And we're going to do those cards after following the interview with Melanie. So hold on to your question or write it down or something so that you don't forget it. And we will invite you to come in and choose a card and bring up your question following the interview with Melanie, which promises to be a really great interview. Let's see. We want to invite you to go to Facebook and join us in the group in Facebook. That's Purpose Talk Radio Conversations on Facebook. Just go ahead and request to join the group, and Cindy or somebody who's there and paying attention will invite you in. And then you can join all the conversations that go on about the show. I probably have forgotten something, but I'll go ahead and read the card or do the card for the show now. And Cindy can let me know in the meantime what I've forgotten. So the card is called The Crown. And it shows a young woman standing in a field. There are narcissus around her in blossom. Behind her, it looks like the sun, and she has a little, I've got to figure out what you call those. It's like a veil. It doesn't come over her face, but it like a wedding veil, you know, that goes over her head and down the back, down her back. And on that, on top of her head, is a beautiful crown with a red, looks like a ruby, in the middle of the crown. And kneeling in front of her is a young man, obviously pledging his feasance to the young woman. So her gown is white, and it's got, oh, I've got to put these other glasses on, so bear with the noise as I do that. Okay. Her gown has huge circles on it, and they're filled with blue, and they've got mandalas in them. They're just gorgeous. Wow. Wow. I'll have to scan this and post it so that you can see it. And the top, the neckline of her gown is also blue with some of the designs that are in the mandala. But it's interesting because a couple of those designs almost look like chameleons or lizards. And the crown has, as I said, it's got this red stone in the middle. And then on either side of that decoration, there are, they almost look like, and on top of that decoration as well, they almost look like crosses, but they're kind of stylized crosses. So it, all right, so let's go into the meaning of the card. Oh, and her veil from and back is, apparently there's a bit of a breeze because it's blowing around onto the shoulder of the young man, kind of enveloping him. She's looking down at him with her eyes open, and her face is very peaceful. There's not a lot of, there's not turmoil. She's definitely looking at him. She's not looking within or looking somewhere else. She's looking right at him. And her hands are down by her side. They're kind of cupped a little bit, but they're still open. And everything about her is loose and receptive. And he is obviously appealing to her. His hands are held out kind of in supplication. So, what does it mean? You going to tell me? Oh, I have to tell you. That's right. Okay. Well, I know that a lot of you are going to be able to tell me what your interpretation is as well. And that noise was just me taking my glasses off, my second pair of glasses off. So, we have the innocence of both of the people, the young man and the young woman. There's a bright sun. You know, it almost looks like it's nighttime, but as far as the sky in the back is a darker color, but it's obviously a sun that's shining fully upon them. And there are several things in this card, as there are in all cards, but in this card, we've got the Narcissus in blossom in front, in the foreground. And Narcissus obviously has multiple meanings. It can be a negative, which would be self-absorption and not caring about anybody else and so absorbed with yourself that you can't even see the real world around you. And the other part about Narcissus, The other part about Narcissus is that it is so beautiful and so showy that other people can't help but looking at it as well. So there is the beauty of self. And it isn't the self-absorption of self. It is the beauty that each of us hold within us that is our self. The young woman is indicative of the queen. You know, you have to kind of take this. Well, you have to look at it as though the young woman and the young man are the same. So they're depicted as male and female. However, the message goes for both of us, both male and female. So I'm going to give a generic message here that just remember, if you're a woman, apply it to yourself. If you're a man, apply it to yourself. So the young woman who's standing there shows the openness, the receptiveness, and the innocence, but also the regal coming or background that she has of her birth. The young man is dressed in more of a peasant outfit. He's got, you can't see most of his outfit, but his jacket is a brown, very plain, no decoration on it. And his haircut is also a little bit more in style, in line with the peasant style. So here is this young regal queen looking at her a supplicant who is from her peasant population, and she is looking at him openly and with reception. So in other words, she's not judging because he has peasant clothes on. She's not making any judgment. She's not making a judgment about his personality or what kind of life he leads or anything. She is simply looking at him and being receptive to whatever it is that he wants to ask her or say to her. And we all have this card is in each of us. Both parts are in each of us. We are each that young woman who is born into regal, who's born from a king and a queen. It doesn't matter what your parents' background is, or your grandparents, or go all the way back to the beginning of your line. It doesn't matter. Each one of us is born with that kingly and queenly presence and personality within us. Because what that implies is just because of who we are, we deserve respect. We deserve to be honored because we're regal, because we are a king or a queen. The important thing as this king or queen that we each of us is to be open and be receptive to all the messages that come to us, to the people that come into our lives. Not everybody's going to be good to us. We all know that. But not everybody's going to be bad. So it's important to stay open to give that person permission and the allowance to be whoever he or she is. And from that point on, we can make a decision of whether to that person is going to stay in our life or not. So you've got the crown, the regal crown. You've got the narcissus at their feet, which also is the beauty and that everybody else, the light shining through us, that people are drawn to us. And remember also, each one of us has that peasant blood in us as well as the regal blood in us. And that we, as a peasant, we want to be heard. Of course, if we're regal, we want to be heard too. But as a peasant, too often we're not heard. And we want to be heard. We want to be acknowledged as having value, as having worth. And in this case, this regal person is looking at the peasant and listening. She's listening. She's open. Everything about her is open and receptive. And she's listening to what he is asking or saying. This is not only in our relationships with others, but in the relationships that we have with ourselves. We are that queen or king. We are that peasant. We have a responsibility to listen to our own inner self. We need to listen to what it is that we're asking and what it is that we're saying. The young man is on his knees in supplication to be heard. She, the little queen, is not that far away from him. So he doesn't have to yell at her. He doesn't have to be loud to make himself heard. He's quiet. His voice is quiet. So remember, when you're listening to that voice inside that needs to be heard, that wants to be heard, there's a good chance that it's going to be a quiet voice. So when we hear the voices of people around us, when we have people who we're in relationship with, whether it's a partnership, a business partnership, an intimate relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a parent-child, it doesn't make any sense. We have to deal with an adult child and an elderly parent. We need to make sure that we listen, not only to the voice inside of us, but to the voice that's being spoken from someone else. So you've got the external voice of coming towards you, and you've got your internal voice. And this is critical that we listen to all those voices openly, receptively, willing to hear. And the young man also has his hands held out in an attitude of supplication that he wants to be heard. He is making himself vulnerable to her. And this is a very fearful thing for each of us, is to make ourselves vulnerable. So vulnerable to yourself sometimes is just as much of a challenge as being vulnerable to someone else. And remember, you know, the Bible says, treat your neighbor as you treat yourself. And too often, we don't like ourselves, and we treat ourselves cruelly. We treat ourselves with hatred and disrespect. So it just follows that that's how we treat our neighbors. You know, we can treat them, it may be obvious, it may be covert, but very often we treat our neighbors just as ugly as we treat ourselves. So one of the things I would recommend as you're learning to treat yourself even better is to treat your neighbor as you want to be treated. Don't expect them to treat you the same way back. But if you treat your neighbor in the way you want to be treated, then you will come to a better recognition of how you want to be treated. So this will be an example for you. This will be, instead of writing things down of, I want this or I want that or I don't want this or whatever, is a real living example of, oh, this is how I want to be treated. This is what I want from somebody else. And when you recognize that that's how you wanted to be treated by somebody else, also recognize that that is how you want to be treated by your own self. Well, that went into quite a bit more detail than I thought it was going to. So if you have more to add to this, feel free. You can call in or you can go to the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group and join the conversation there. So Cindy let me know that one of the things in the housekeeping that I needed to do was how to contact me. Isn't that fun? So we'll talk about how to contact Melanie a little bit later. And I'm going to tell you that right now you can contact me by going to janrevell.com. That's JanRevell.com. Or you can email me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. You can go to Purpose Talk Radio and find out about me as well. Well, there's all kinds of ways to find out about me. And you can also, and to reach me though, you can email jan@purposetalkradio.com. Got that frog still in my throat, so my apologies. Okay, we're going to go to our guest, Melanie Barris. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her before I bring her on, and then I'm going to start asking her some questions as well. Melanie is married and has four children. In 1991, she founded the Midwest Rock Opera Company, and that is a company that empowers women on stage and behind stage. She has been a two-term president for the Milwaukee Business and Professional Women's Group and president of the Association for Women in Communication. She's done a whole bunch of things. She has created a magazine to empower women called City Gal, and you can find that at City Gal, C-I-T-Y-G-A-L, magazine.com, citygalmagazine.com. And that you can find on the purposetalkradio.com page, guest page, and you can we'll also post it in the conversations group. Melanie is a survivor of childhood abuse and covert domestic violence, and she's currently in therapy to repair her marriage. 4 years ago, her husband was diagnosed with severe passive-aggressive personality disorder coupled with secondary narcissism. I have no clue what that means, so we're going to ask Melanie about that. But Melanie and her husband have devoted themselves to therapy to repair their marriage and restore mental health to their children. Melanie's writing a book about emotional violence and relationship boundaries. Boy, we've been talking about boundaries before, haven't we? And we'll continue talking about boundaries. We're going to talk with Melanie this morning about relational aggression, otherwise known as RA. And there's a group called the Ophelia Project that is working with that as well. So we're going to learn more from Melanie about RA, about the Ophelia Project, and about her experiences. So I'm bringing Melanie in live now. Hi, Melanie. This is Jan. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Jan?
Great. I'm glad to hear that you got your technical issues resolved.
Yeah.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I'd like to do, first of all, is ask you about you said you went through childhood abuse and domestic violence. And tell us a little bit about your history, if you would, and then how you came to be working to how did you find your passion, which sounds like it's empowering women in particular. So let's just go from there, and you can correct anything that I've said.
Sure. Well, my mother was a single mother, and she was severely abusive. Of course, nobody thought of it as abuse back then. You know, the emotional flights, oh, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're lazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, because kids act out, they're just kids. So it was much more violent than that. She had a boyfriend who was very, very violent. I actually kind of grew up with these two different egos because I was also in my developmental stages, mainly raised on the weekends and on vacations by my great aunt, who is Depression era. She passed away in the year 2000 at age 91. But the fantastic thing about her is she went back to high school at 37, put herself through high school scrubbing floors at a mental facility, and then went to get her master's and doctorate in New York in education, special education. So
wow.
If you were to Google her name, Marie Kalupa, you would see that she set up the special education system as we know it. And the most
wow.
fantastical thing about this woman, who is my heroine, as is my mother, you know, is she was a lesbian. So she actually would visit New York 8, 9, 10 times a year to see her girlfriend, but she was also married. But you couldn't come out during those days.
Right, right.
Another interesting fact is in high school I found out we were Jewish, and I came from a line of Jewish mediums. And so that sums up my childhood. It was very horrific, to say the least. I became a professional musician by the time I was 13 and moved out by the time I was 16, got my GED, went back to college, founded a rock opera company, fell in love with a guy who didn't know that he was beat with religion and society and had no idea he was a passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do you discover something like that?
You wake up in a complete shock, in complete shock. How I discovered it, you lose your mind. We understand what passive aggressivity is. You know, it's just such covert violence. You can't touch it.
Wait a minute. Do me a favor, and for anybody who doesn't know, can you give a definition of passive aggressive? And or an example?
An example would be, it's the Southern charm. It's, I like your bracelet, but you really don't. It just goes much further than that. Passive aggressive, non-responsive to what
okay,
you're talking
so,
about.
Mm-hmm. So I have a past experience of you're in a relationship with somebody and you say, well, let's go to dinner. Oh, that sounds great. Where would you like to go? Oh, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't pick the right place, you're in the doghouse.
You are. They expect you to know what they're thinking. They
right.
expect you to fit in their box. They expect that you have the same ideas and same thought process. And there is no direct communication because they're fearful. You know, because they want their way. They're absolute covert controllers. So, and you're always caught off guard by everything it is they do. They never follow through. They think everything is your fault. It's always somebody else's fault. Mm-hmm. And they end up isolating you, ignoring you. And when you sit down and try to confront them face to face in a very compassionate way, no matter what, they will not comply. So it's much deeper than that, but that's just some of the behaviors. I think the emotional unavailability and the ambiguity and the not being able to ever be wrong, ever say you're sorry, and they keep you in complete chaos because they don't follow through. It's just awful, you know?
Wow.
And then the slight that comes, you know? And my degree or the severity of my husband's abuse was far more difficult. And when I woke up to it, it's like you wake up and you look in the mirror and all of these pins and knives that were once invisible all show. They appear. All the bloody scrapes and scars that you had no idea this guy's hitting and running and beating you over the head with a psychological bat. Because you actually end up thinking it's all your fault. So you're spinning around trying to change everything, only they'll never tell you what it is. It is diabolical. It's vicious.
And so what is the narcissism part of it?
The secondary,
what is that?
It's a lack of empathy,
okay.
a lack of or it's entitlement. They take all of your rights away. And how they do that is by inactivity or saying yes when they mean no, and they're just going to go ahead and do what they want anyway. Or they'll make you believe that they're on the same wavelength as you, but once again, they'll go ahead and do what they want anyway. It's insanity. It really is, and it literally drives whoever is on the receiving end insane. And they're unaware. They're completely unaware. They think
they're unaware.
Okay. Yes. They think this is okay.
Okay. So I have a question. There was a time when I was in a relationship that my partner was verbally saying, I support you. I support what you're doing. But in every other way, there was no support at all.
Right. That's passive aggressive.
Okay. And yet the person thought that they were being supportive.
Correct, because that's what they're saying. Never listen ever, ever to somebody's words, because truthfully, the society, the average human being runs on passive aggressivity. I'm not kidding. It's really due to religion and societal norms, patriarchal, you know, all of those types of things. And the fact remains is you cannot listen to what people say.
Wait a minute. Let's back up here.
Yeah.
You said this has something to do with religion?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Can you clarify that a little bit?
I sure can. Religion taught, God, where do I start with that?
Well, synopsis.
As I say, yeah. Synopsis, children should be seen and not heard. All these little isms, right? If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
But that's not religion. That's societal. That's cultural.
Oh, no. That comes from the Catholic religion.
Full, it does?
Completely. Completely.
Because I've had it heard it in my family, and it's generational.
It is generational, but that is... It's not in, say, Buddhism or Judaism. Those types of isms aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to constantly question everything. In Judaism or Buddhism or some of the other Eastern philosophies, in Christianity, you are not supposed to question anything. So it forces,
well, that's true. Yeah.
It forces people to go behind this veil. And if you don't fit in the familial or societal box, it forces you to become a pathological liar.
I do recall that in the Bible, it talks about women as being subservient to men.
Oh, yes.
I think that started with Paul. I think it started with Paul. Paul was pretty much of a chauvinist.
Paul was insane. they all were. And it was, to me, the Bible and all of those types of things were great, great psychology books for the day, lessons to learn and sing by. But But, you know, it starts there, and it is a societal norm. And then if we take it further and uncover that level, the relational aggression among women creates societal poverty. We have all the power, but we will not give it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We'll help a woman when she's down, but forget it if she's rising.
Wait a minute. You're saying aggression is women against women?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's relational aggression is just bullying. It's a name for bullying.
Okay. All right.
But the relational or internalized female hate is the root cause of all disease in society. Period. Yeah. Period.
So is that in women or in men or both?
It's in women. Our hate for each other, our hate for ourselves, the competitiveness, and the fact that we don't help women on the rise get up, get into positions of power, yet we see them and view them as competition, is societal demise. It's what it is. And if women do not learn how to work together, resolve issues, support that woman on the rise, and if she falls, you know, create a good old girls network and stop with the slut and the whore and watching this horrible stuff, we're going to go nowhere quick.
Yeah.
You know?
So is that changing? I mean, in the areas that I've lived in, that seems to be changing quite a bit. And there is a lot of support between women to help them promote each other and to grow and provide support.
That, you know, I think there might be murmurings of that, but Hillary certainly would have been elected if that were the case.
Well, you got a point there, yeah.
So there's just too much of that still, and you see it in my young girls, and you see it in their culture, the slut, the whore, and I have never raised my daughters like that. Every time I've heard that out of their mouth, it's a soft spot. Don't you ever call her that. I don't care if she walks around with tassels on, you don't call her that.
Yeah.
You are giving society permission to pummel these girls. You're giving them eating disorders. You are teaching them that they don't have any brain, that they need a man to survive. And it's not that we don't. We need each other to survive, but we're giving our power away by beating each other up, making each other fit in each other's boxes.
So how can we change that? How can we heal? How can we heal ourselves and change ourselves as a society? Or I understand that. I mean, the change has to come within each individual. So how can we do that and then be working together with each other and eventually, obviously, society
will
change?
Did I lose you? Okay, I'm here.
Okay, can you hear me?
Oh, no.
Melanie, can you hear me? Cindy, can you hear me? Okay, you can hear me. We don't know what happened to Melanie. All right. So it looks like we lost Melanie for the moment, and I think that she'll be back on either by Skype or by phone shortly, and then we'll get back to asking her the questions. So since we have a little bit of a break in here, if anybody has a question or concern and you want me to read a card for you, I would be glad to do that. You just need to call in 347-205-9074 or come in via Skype, and I'll be glad to provide that card for you. And otherwise, we will just keep on talking about healing from abuse. Actually, I'm going to draw a card here. Talking about healing from abuse. This is card 2, and the name of it is The Flame. Oh, we've had this before, but it's a beautiful card, and it's so relevant to today. This shows a tapestry in the background, and in front of that, a young woman are standing. His hands are on her shoulders, and her hands are on his chest. We have Melanie back, so I'm going to bring her in, but that was bad. Okay. Melanie, that was awful static on your phone or on your Skype. So I put you back on mute. Maybe you could try calling in again. So the card shows the young man and the young woman, and her hands are on his chest and his hands are on her shoulder, and there is a large red candle in front of them with a beautiful flame to it. They're looking at each other with love. He is a soldier. He has his metal soldier outfit on, and she has a lovely gown that has a lot of, looks like leaves in there, in her gown. So this is talking about exactly what we've been talking about with healing from abuse. And the healing from abuse is loving yourself. Just like the card that we had, the crown, where the young man is in supplication and the young woman is regal and royal and is there in openness and receptiveness. In this card, we have the young man and the young woman who are in love. This is loving every part of ourselves. So just like Melanie was talking about, of that internal hatred that we are brought up with, that we are taught that I'm no good, don't have any worth, I'm stupid, I can't do math as good as a man can do it, which is a big lie. Well, they're all big lies, aren't they? They're huge lies, because every one of us is valuable, and every one of us has male and female in us, and it is critical that each of us learns to love aspect of yourself, both aspects of yourself, the male and the female, or not the male, the masculine and the feminine. So what would a masculine and feminine be? Let's just say for a minute, one of the things that I think is important in a relationship, and this is male and female both, is communication, open communication. When I, one time in a relationship, when we were getting to know each other, we sat in bed at night and we had a huge dictionary, one of those great big ones, Webster, you know, big, huge, big as a laptop computer and heavier. And we would be in a conversation and one of us would say a word or a phrase and the other one would say, oh my gosh, well, that here's what that means to me. What does your interpretation, what does it mean to you? And then we would go to the dictionary to find out what Webster said it meant. So we were learning to communicate with each other in a healthy manner. And this is really important in any relationship, including with yourself, is communicating in a healthy manner. Whether you are talking or reading or what. The other part is that, let me see here, where was I going with that? The other part is, learning that sometimes we think of the female part of us as being soft and staying in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant and all of that stuff, and the masculine part of ourselves as being all angles and hard and not feminine, and or as if you're a man, you think of the female part as being just too frilly and too limp wrist and all of that stuff. So there, we've been brought up with a societal and cultural pain for any woman who exhibits masculine qualities and any man who exhibits feminine qualities. And they don't have to be gay or lesbian. I mean, I know many married couples where he has a limp wrist and is as straight as can be. So don't judge. Just like in the royal woman and her peasant person, don't judge. Be open. Be open to this all and learn to love every part of yourself. I remember when I was learning how to recognize the masculine part of myself, I sat down one day, I was in my 20s, and I said, well, what does it mean to me to be a woman? What does that mean? And I had two very distinct pictures in my mind. One of them was soft and round and white pants, cookies and all that other stuff. And my lip curled, kind of a sneer. The other part of the other picture that I had was a professional woman who was all angles. There was no softness. There was no cushiony. There was no maternal part to her. And when I looked at that, I went, wow, that's cold. Somewhere I've got to be able to combine the two of these, to merge that feminine softness and that professional angles, so that I'm not all curves and not all angles, but I'm a blend of the two, so that I can love both parts of myself. And it certainly took some time to be able to do that. But eventually I was able to do it. And another thing that you learn too is, you know, it's kind of funny because you think about men cooking and how that's a very feminine trait, and maybe they're not quite manly enough. But if you think about men in the military, they learn how to cook. So, and if they want to eat, they got to learn how to cook. So it isn't something that is a female-only trait. And one of the things that we can do is help teach them and make it fun. It isn't that they have to do these, you know, things that they don't like, but make it fun. And one of the things I learned to accept my self-sufficient part of myself was we had wood heat one time. And so we ended up having a truckload of logs, of trees, of great cute long, you know, 30-foot lengths of wood delivered in our backyard. And I learned how to use a chainsaw. And we're not talking about one of the 16 or 18-inch bar chainsaws. We're talking huge 24-inch chain that was and on an old Poulan chainsaw that was really, really heavy. So I learned that I can do manly things and still be feminine. In fact, I was told just the other day by my friend Marva that I was feminine. And I said, wow, I haven't heard that one in a long time. But there's card two. It's called The Flame, and it deals directly with abuse and healing from abuse, and that is to learn to love all aspects of yourself and to burn that candle bright and clear between both parts. So, Melanie, you're back on. We got you on the phone this time, huh?
I think so. I should. So I don't... That's interesting. That's a new headset, too.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you made it back.
Yeah.
Okay. So, defining relational aggression, and how can we individually, how can we heal ourselves from that internal hatred that you were talking about? And then that obviously is going to help us in teaching our children and also in changing society.
Well, how can we heal ourselves? I mean, the normal ways, you know, through groups or what have you. But what you have to do is pay attention to who's in your life. And you have to set real good boundaries with those people. Do they make you feel good? Are they reciprocal? What do they actually say, and what do they actually do?
So this could be anybody. This could be in business. It could be in friendships. It could be in intimate relationships, in family relationships. It could be anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It could absolutely be anybody.
Okay. So what if you're in a...
Yeah.
You discover that a person, like someone in your family, for instance, or maybe your entire family for that matter, but someone really doesn't make you feel good. They put you down, they laugh at you, they make nasty comments. Do you have to divorce yourself from your family?
No, you have to first face the conflict and become real direct and assertive and tell them what hurts and then see their response. If they respond with secondary anger, that this shouldn't hurt you, then you've got to say, well, then I have to remove myself, because we all have soft spots, and they can be all different colors. It doesn't matter. Nobody is entitled to tell you what should hurt and what should not. They do need to respect your boundaries if something hurts. We're all walking wounds. So if they don't respect your boundaries and they keep doing the things that make you hurt inside or make you feel bad, then you must remove yourself from that situation because they don't respect you. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense, but I know that a lot of people are going to have some real fear around having to, first of all, confront somebody, no matter how assertive or gentle it can be, because of the fear that's involved with facing that person. And then if you have to say, remove yourself, that can be pretty traumatic.
Well, it can. And other courses, too, depending on who it is to go to therapy and learn boundaries. But if you don't have the courage to face conflict, then you are just as passive aggressive.
Okay, so learning boundaries and creating boundaries for yourself is one of the major things about not being passive aggressive, not being a victim,
right,
and being assertive. Is that right?
Yeah. You have to have the courage to speak your truth compassionately and directly without beating around the bush. This hurts me because.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about creating boundaries. How do you do that?
For anybody, anything, you do a lot of talking. You communicate. Okay. You share. And if, you know, there's something that you disagree with, you can agree to disagree with. If it's something that somebody does that hurts you, you know, like say, for instance, you have this twinge inside that somebody's trying to one-up you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
be competitive with you. Mm-hmm. You can ask that. Are you trying to be competitive with you? Is it something I said? Do you feel that I am trying to harm you in any way? What is making you behave like this? My favorite story is when I was in this, I was in a networking group, and I showed up one time, and there was this one woman there that clearly showed me through body language that she didn't like me. And I was in a group of people speaking, and she would purposely turn her back towards me. So I figured out, why don't I just put my hand gently on her shoulder and ask her if I noticed that she feels uncomfortable with me due to her body language. Whenever I try to come near her or get in the same circle that she's in, you know, she does this. So I called her out on it gently and asked if I offended her. And, oh, the Southern charm was put on and everybody knew it. We can all see this stuff. It's the bystanders. And they have to be good enough to not allow this to happen. Well, she never did that to me again. Because I wanted to know, did I offend her?
Mm-hmm.
Did I hurt her feelings? Because we all can hurt each other's feelings, but you have to have the courage to communicate that.
Right.
And I didn't hurt her feelings. There was just something about me that she did not appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that I deserve her contempt.
Right.
You know, or her sabotage. So I just gently called her out and said, am I doing something to offend you? Because I notice every time I come near you, you put your back to me. And that, you know, of course, called her out, and she felt really embarrassed. And, of course, oh, no, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you have to have the courage to communicate. If you feel somebody's trying to hurt you indirectly, because we all know what it is, eye rolls, huffs and puffs, all of those things. Have the courage to say, am I hurting you?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is in a way a safe situation because it's somebody that you didn't know, it's out in public, it's a stranger. What about dealing with somebody in your family, with a spouse, with a parent?
Well, once again, you have to sit down and say, this is hurting me. You have to say to that person, this is hurting me. When you talk negatively about me, when you tell me my ideas, my thoughts, my very being, there's something wrong with it, when there really isn't ethically or morally, it hurts my feelings when you don't listen to me, when you don't respond when I talk, when you act like I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very specific with what hurts, and you'll get your answer by how they respond to you. If they respond, I am very sorry, this is why I do that. Or if they respond with secondary anger, well, I do that because you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your answer. There is no working with somebody where you call them to the table with something that hurts you and they have an excuse for why they hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all communication, 90% of it is not verbally. It's in the action and the body language.
So we need to be very careful of our body language as well.
Oh, always. Always. And check other people's temperatures. If you notice they're feeling uncomfortable, just say, am I doing something to hurt you? Did I say something to offend you? You know, maybe I'm not making myself clear. So everyone has to really get direct with each other and learn to respect each other's soft spots. Because we all have them. And they are so vast because they just are. We're all unique. So we need to learn to respect each other's soft spots.
Okay, so
very direct.
Let's tackle another one, this whole relational abuse thing. Let's just say that you are in a working situation, you're in a job, okay, and your supervisor is abusive in this way, puts you down or it disrespects you, doesn't listen to you. How do you handle that?
Once again, you have to sit down with that person and be very careful and say, am I doing something to hurt you? And then be very specific with the things that this boss is doing to harm you, sabotage you, emotionally violate you in front of people. Now, usually that's a corporate culture. So the chances of you getting anywhere is nowhere because the problem really lies within the bystanders. And because everybody knows what's going on, they know that you're being picked on and they're not going to do anything about it because they don't want to be caught in the crossfire. So unfortunately, you can document, and there's been cases now more and more where people are winning millions from corporations because this causes serious health problems, including terminal illness. Bullying causes death.
Really? Well, yeah, it does. We've seen it in suicides, but
it causes cancer. Complex
really?
PTSD, of course. Complex PTSD and major depression cause cancer.
Wow.
Huh. Complex PTSD, which is something I'm recovering from, has the potential to cause blood cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go back for a minute because you mentioned something that I think is critical, is being specific when you're talking with a person, when you're communicating with someone, is talking about a specific instance, not just you always, you never.
Correct. No, you have to go right in for the direct. And you have to be very direct and extremely compassionate because people don't mean to hurt people. So if you go in with a blaming, torched-up attitude, you're just going to fuel up flame.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody might not even be aware that the way that they walk into, you know, a place and sit down next to you bothers you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's really being gentle, and then there's a fine line between excuse me, petty. You know what I mean? And just allowing someone with their little quirks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's so much to learn, and nobody teaches direct, compassionate speech. Everybody's afraid of conflict.
Okay. Well, I know that Scott Cadamus has been on our program before, and he talks about compassionate communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are quite a few people who are teaching that. It's become more popular over the years. So this, from what I'm hearing you say, this would be a really important course to participate in.
Oh, it's key. It's absolute key. Another book to read would be The Four Agreements.
Right.
The Four Agreements. I mean, if you can master those, and the one I don't master very well is taking people personally.
Yeah.
You know, because I am very strong and I am very out there. So it scares people. People want to run for the hills because my marriage is no different than 80% of the marriages out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this from working with psychiatrists that are not only my friends, but I also know this from the therapist. This is just widespread. And it's not just men that are doing this, that are taking the rights of their spouses away. It's women, too. You know? So nobody knows boundaries.
Yeah.
Nobody knows them. Nobody knows what healthy relationships are. They just think they know. and then all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just, it's out there, and nobody wants to address this, especially, I thought the funniest thing, when my husband put up his apology on my Facebook, and because he was, you know, he made a public an apology. There was a couple things that I had when this broke open, because he was just as unaware as I was. That mm-hmm. doesn't mean he's not responsible for the terrorism. He is. It's really bad. But the funniest thing in the world is all of these people were posting their marriage pictures, and they were posting their perfect families, and we just couldn't help but crack up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that they were doing that in response to his letter?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, because it's just what people do. No, not me.
Yeah.
It blew up his family, you know?
Yeah.
We got an in-mail from one of his cousins, and we started a ruckus because it's so prevalent, the control and the domination. It's this passive aggressivity is in the DNA, and the secondary narcissism is in the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so prevalent in his family. And we blew up his entire family because they paint these perfect pictures.
Yeah.
And it's just covert bullying and control to make sure everything looks perfect. The table's set. We've got
perfect kids.
What made you decide to
go public with it?
It was that or divorce and a post-nuptial agreement.
Okay. A post-nuptial agreement.
Oh, you bet I did. And I have raised my girls, and my son will be raised too, knowing his rights, because so many marriages, the men's rights are taken away too. And once again, it's ignorant.
Uh-huh.
Nobody really knows this stuff. I told my kids that marriage, if you do it, it's a spiritual contract. You need to go in and get in a prenup and at least go to 2 years of premarital counseling, have a deep sense of spirituality, and learning how to face conflict and problems, because life throws just so much at you.
2 years of spiritual counseling seems like a long engagement in these days.
It may, but you want to save yourself from complex PTSD, major depression, and a blown up family, and a blown up world, from finances to, you know, everything else, then you might want to think about being real smart before you decide to share your life with somebody, because mm-hmm. you have to be direct, compassionate, and assertive, and mm-hmm. nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
If I would have known half of my husband's ideals, I would have ran for the hills.
Yeah.
He just agreed with me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. We have, Melanie, we have a caller, Valerie.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
she wants to talk to you, so I'm going to bring
sure.
Valerie in to the
Excellent.
Conversation as well. Hi, Valerie. This is Jan. How are you?
Hi, Jan. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Valerie.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear you on here. So,
anyway. So I take it you two know each other, huh?
No, not at all. Just a bit from Facebook. Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you calling from, Valerie?
Minneapolis.
All right. Okay.
So
tell us what's going on.
Well, I was calling because, Melanie, you're so spot on as far as the passive aggressiveness and narcissism and the damage that these things can do within relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But what I wanted to really bring about is that it goes even, I believe, beyond that. You've touched on the fact that their families are so supportive, you know, and always say the right thing. So are our courtrooms. And when you get into family court with issues like this, it's really, this is my perspective on it anyway. This type of personality has become the newest form of domestic abuse that there is.
And I don't think it's a new form. I think it's just busted out wide open because it's killing people.
I agree. I agree with you completely. And the fact that it is supported by law enforcement, by even the domestic violence centers, unless, and it can be a man or a woman. It just happens
yes.
to be women more often. But unless you're literally bleeding and needing medical, you know, ER, triage care, there is no acknowledgement of this. Would you get
no.
Would you agree?
I would agree, and that was one of my conditions, is that when Scott really fully untwists, is he's going to be, he wants to be the poster boy to stop this emotional violence. You know, he will say, and he's not untwisted fully yet, you know, he's just starting to wake up and to understand how to speak and what, how he needs to pick up his family and resuscitate them. He's just starting to figure that all out. And it could go either way, because less than 3% of people with this neurosis actually can modify.
Well, that's just it, and it goes to how people even today will raise their sons differently than they do their daughters.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a daughter and you're from toddlerhood through adulthood who handled any conflict by hitting or fighting or do,
oh,
you know, just
know.
Completely no social skills, you would be very concerned. Most people would be. We tend to
mm-hmm.
excuse it in our boys so much more.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times the ones who hit a lot and everything were real aggressive as children, they learn, a lot of them learn by the time they're an adult to cope, in that they don't want to get arrested and stuff, so they don't go around hitting people. They find other ways to be just as cruel.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Valerie, the covert violence, the isolation, the emotional attacks, the secondary anger, the not being able to respect your boundaries and nurture you and provide love and communication. It's
but it
just
is because they don't know what it is. It's not giving them a pass in any
no.
way, but they truly
no.
don't know why they're doing what they know that it's not right. They see, they observe normal other people and wonder
right.
why they can feel and they can't. So it's really just a sad, it would be so much better for them in the long run if these things were opened up and analyzed and talked about. And it is a form of mental illness, and there shouldn't be this type of shame. You know, the shame is
mm-hmm.
a huge part of this as well. I loved what you said about the spiritual contact. As far as
mm-hmm.
marriage, and about marriage fraud. I mean, this is a big form of fraud, a relationship fraud. You know, you,
well,
you
it
have
is,
no way
if
of
I would
knowing.
Have, Valerie, if I would have known half of his ideals, there would have been no way, and I communicated them. I communicated what I needed, what I wished, what I wanted all throughout the marriage. If I
right.
would have known half of what he believed in, because he was not emotionally developed, there is no way I would have had children with this man. Not any way in the world.
One thing
now,
that
what he has become,
I'm sorry.
What he's become and what he is becoming is what I'm falling in love with, because that is what he told me he was.
Okay, I need to jump in here for a minute. This is Jan. Because, Melanie, you made a comment that... In his process right now, it could go either way,
and that
it was a very low percentage of people who actually healed from this. That's pretty depressing statistics.
It's very depressing statistics. It could go either way. Our last progress report in therapy, unfortunately, was that he has not modified much. He is psychologically dangerous because it's in their bone marrow. It's in their bone marrow. This is how they behave. It's
okay.
like breathing.
Is it bone marrow, or is it how they were brought up, as Valerie is implying or suggesting?
It's a neurosis.
And she's right.
It's DNA.
Right.
It's partial DNA.
Do you think to that effect? How do you know that a drug addict or an alcoholic, how do you know the answer to that?
It's
we
the
don't
same
know.
Thing. Right. It's mm-hmm. in the DNA. Now, what he has to do and what he's being coached to do is now he needs to research and study and become his own person. And so he's putting those steps forward. But there is a limit. There has to be, because you cannot live with this. You cannot find any self-esteem in a relationship that is passive-aggressive for those that aren't passive-aggressive. Now, if he were to have married another passive-aggressive or a narcissist, they would have swam peacefully off together, showing the world their perfect children, and when in actuality their children are just extensions of them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right. So how can you how can you find out about what that person believes before a marriage? I mean, you have to go through this 2 years of counseling?
I believe so. Absolutely. You pull it out.
Well, if I could say something about that, is one thread in hundreds of women that I've spoken to, or people that have gone through this, because there have been a few men. One common thread, and Melanie, you can say if you disagree, is that many of the relationships did progress very quickly to begin with. You know,
totally.
Yeah, almost. It's a common thread. It really is, because the person with these disorders, they're playing a game. They're it's a facade. It's a charade, and they can only keep it up for so long.
And they don't know it.
The sooner they get the courting stage over with, the better. And oftentimes, another common thread is you'll find that there has been some incident or revealing of themselves very close to the time of the wedding. Or the moving in, or some significant coupling event.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that, Melanie?
Oh, my God, yeah. I got pregnant with our first daughter, and he didn't tell his family for 8 months.
Right.
Now, if I would have had a father, my father would have went over to his house and kicked his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, there were so many red flags, so many.
They choose, but they aren't such. I mean, when you understand it, though, it's almost, they're very predatory, you know.
Oh, they are absolute predators.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they don't know it. I want to stress, they do not understand. They think it's okay.
That's
a crazy
pretty
thing.
Sad statement on our society. Because you made a comment before that, like, your marriage was the same as, what, two-thirds
80%
of marriages?
80%, okay. Yes.
Where do you get these statistics? Is there...
From Psychology Today will tell you,
okay.
The therapists that I work with and the
uh-huh.
therapists that I see.
Okay.
Yeah, society is absolutely emotionally underdeveloped, and we can see it in everybody. Look at the picket fences people put on. Like I told you, when this story broke, and to Scott's credit, what man does that? I mean, you can read his note on Facebook. It's bone-chilling.
Mm-hmm.
So he really does want out of this. He loves his family. He wants out of this. It's a horrible thing when you live your entire life thinking you're really this good person to wake up to knowing that you're Hitler.
Yeah, that would
be
pretty dramatic. Awakening.
It's dramatic, and it's a dramatic awakening that, oh my God, how could I have been so screwed over?
Mm-hmm. So, Melanie, Valerie, don't go away, because I need to talk to you a little bit too. But, Melanie, how or what resources are available to people to be able to learn boundaries, to be able to recognize if they're in a situation that is not a healthy one? Because sometimes the person who is being abused is also not
looking. We're in fog. We're both in
yes,
a fog.
Exactly.
And the world is in a fog because they're afraid. And mm-hmm. what I can say is that all you have to do is Google passive-aggressive people, and it's all right there. And
okay.
and then you start from there, and then you go to the spirituality books like the Four Agreements. You've got to meditate. You've got to eat right. You've got to do yoga. And you've just got to give yourself a break, because if you are a victim of bullying, and I have been all my life because my mother was a bully, and but on the contrary to that, I've always been extremely successful. So you got things coming at you from everywhere because people mm-hmm. are nuts.
Yeah.
You've just got to develop that way and learn who to surround yourself with. I'll never forget one of my greatest mentors in the world. Her name is Elaine Molly, and she was the director at the time for the Women's Fund. And I'm bringing in some, you know, like, huge speakers. And I am telling her, I just don't understand the mean girl stuff. And, you know, some of the stuff that was happening in my life, this is before, you know, I was still in bliss with my husband as I'm basically being piled under everything. But she said, who's your picker?
Your picker?
Who is your chooser? She said, who's your picker? And I knew what she meant by that. Who chooses who's in your life?
Ah.
You
for them.
That's very good. That's very good.
And I went on a weeding frenzy, and I weeded and weeded and weeded, and was very, very slow to make friendships and to go into business with people and to make sure everything was contracted and the I's were crossed and the T's were dotted. And my circle of friends is so tight.
Yeah,
I won't let anybody infiltrate because they and it's just a difference of being on a different emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my friends are 10 to 25 years old that I've cultivated and nurtured that will be there, that understand everything about me. They're there to reciprocate and support and lend a shoulder to cry on as I with them. And mm-hmm. we face conflict. That's one thing. If you don't have conflict with friends, and you can't face that to a fair resolve, you don't have friends.
Right.
There's
yes,
no such thing.
That's right. You can tell a good friend if they... I have... My friend Marva is here visiting, and she mm-hmm. told me one time I said something and obviously hurt her feelings. So she went off into the other room, and afterwards I said to her something about, I hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to. It was not an intentional thing. So we came
you
to
checked
an agreement.
Your temperature.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we came to an agreement. She said that when I did something that I was sounding snippy or whatever and it would hurt her feelings, she would use a code word. We came up with a code word, and she would just say, ouch, which she hasn't done since we made this agreement, by the way. But
isn't
then we
that
agreed that,
beautiful?
Yeah, and then I could do the same thing, is just say, ouch, and we could know that, okay, we needed to talk. We needed
and
to.
And that's really funny because that's mm-hmm. what I tell my friends and that's what I tell people is just say, ouch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can learn to discuss it.
Right.
And if you're needy in a spot and you need that extra little bit of love and tenderness, then so you're needy. So what? Give it to that person because you love them.
Right. Right. Okay, mm-hmm. Melanie, I want to speak to Valerie specifically here. Valerie.
Okay, sure.
I would like to say congratulations to you. You are the 200th member of the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group.
Yay.
Yay.
That's great.
So I wanted to just congratulate you and say thank you for joining us. It's really exciting.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that I found out about this today. Melanie, thanks.
Oh, Valerie, you're an amazing lady.
Can I say one more thing really
Please.
Quickly?
Yes.
I just really, like Melanie was saying too, that I had sent Melanie an article that I had found, and it was called The Brain Chemistry of a Loved One, because I think that when you're involved with people like this, be it a parent or a spouse or could even be a child you have a difficult relationship with, when you're dealing with somebody that is not well, mentally, you and I think all of us end up having our own issues because we're
mm-hmm.
not well to not, you know, we're not setting those healthy boundaries either, you know,
mm-hmm.
at the time.
Right.
So, you hit it. So many, you know, what can be done really the self-analysis, you know, when you're feeling like something is so off, rather than finding ways to fix it. You know, we're going to fix him, fix it, fix the situation. Maybe just looking internally and saying, what can I fix about myself first?
Yeah.
Because so many of these things would reveal at that point. But
okay, I want to ask both of you, what would be one or two things that you would say for yourself on how to set healthy boundaries for yourself? What did you do, one step that you took?
One step that I took was really said therapy or divorce and post-nup or divorce and public apology or divorce. And when you are healed, you are going to go out and really help abusers stop abusing. And he agreed to it all because he is a very good person on the inside. He didn't mean for this. So that mm-hmm. was the healthiest boundary I could have set for myself in this relationship.
Right. What about you, Valerie?
Mine had to go the opposite way. Mine, not by my choice, but by his, really, it just became an issue of, you know, separation, and then things became so ugly that it's, you know, it's basically a no-contact situation. So Yeah. That's when I talk about the legal ramifications, especially if you've got children and
right,
you know, the family court gets involved, this all becomes just really, really difficult. And so the no contact, as much as I didn't want it, ended up being the thing that made me start to get better. Because I'm not sure you can have contact with a person like that when they are not. And Melanie's got a bit, you know, she has that one out of a million person.
I do. I do.
Who's going to change. And I believe in that simply from, you know, knowing that, look at all, go back to addiction. You know, how many people actually quit drinking or using drugs or whatever. It's, the percentage is very rare for people who don't relapse, you know.
Correct.
So,
okay, but let's I want to go back. I think this is really important stuff. I want to go back to boundaries, healthy boundaries. You both, I assume, Valerie, do you have children?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so you both have children. How do you teach your children, based on what your experiences have been, how do you teach your children healthy boundaries? What do you are you teaching them? What steps can they take or what can they do to create a healthy boundary for themselves so they don't end up in this type of a situation?
Communicate and listen to action. They have to be direct and assertive with who they are, what they want, what they wish and need, and they have to communicate. And then they have to listen to action, not words.
Okay.
And that starts by being able to communicate with us and for us setting healthy examples. But I'm so grateful that I have my kids because it's kind of been I had forced to try to set an example for them. And that certainly doesn't mean talking about the other parent, you know. It just means, I mean, it can be as simple as my 10-year-old son and I were invited to a wonderful gathering last Saturday night with people that a lot of people we would have loved to have been with. And at one point I said, I just really don't feel like going. Is that okay with you? And he's like, yeah, I don't really feel like going either, you know. And so, rather than feeling guilty if we didn't go. You know, we're able to talk within our family and just say, I don't really feel like it. You know, so we're not doing things that we're supposed to. Does that make sense?
It definitely makes sense. You're getting away from the, where would you like to go? Oh, I don't care.
Right.
And then ending up.
A friend said to me, too, he said, you worry so much about what other people think. You know, start worrying about what you think. And I think these types of people choose people like us to some degree that do care, you know, which is...
because they can control. It's based on control.
It's based on control and dominance. This is
and
so
it's
much
covert.
Different than someone just being a self-centered type person. I mean, my gosh, we all know people like that. This is on a whole different level. You know, this really does fall on a different level. Yeah, it falls in the diagnostic codes, you know, the mental health manuals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just unfortunate because our society really does. And we're not doing our society any, I mean, we're raising generation after generation. Now we're probably into the third generation here of little narcissists, too. Because we tell them everything they do is wonderful. And you know,
take a look at TV. What is their value system? It is not growing emotionally and making sure you are financially and emotionally well. It's still the Princess and Prince Charming stuff.
Right.
It's still the
60-minute intervals. Yes.
Right. It's grow up and be a rock star. It's not grow up and get healthy, have some candy, have some fun, but help your neighbor. You know, it's just, I mean, and I hate to even say this, it comes from top down. I'm sorry if I'm going to offend people right now, but you don't have an inauguration ball full of Hollywood when 32 kids have just been shot. You come on TV like Kennedy did, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And we need to start in our town halls, and you have solutions. Next, let's watch Mr. President and Mrs. President dance while Beyonce sings. I'm sorry, we've got a crisis here in the world, and it is bullying and narcissism. And,
I'm sorry if I offended people. No, you're absolutely right. I agree with you, but I also look at the practicality or the reality of what happens. You know, we have war where people are killed and people still live and party. I know, you know, when somebody dies that you love, life goes on. And it
does,
goes on
really?
As it has. It does. It continues. And so we have to figure out how to change that, not to rail against it, not to fight against it, but how to approach it from a place of loving ourselves so that we can then love others, so that we can then expand that. So
the discussions about mental health really need to, I mean, it's the last
action,
it is so met with so much shame in our society.
Yeah.
And there, you know what, I always fall back to is almost any one of us has the potential with one little twist of DNA or one little hormone imbalance or anything to have any of these emotions from being, you know, loving to being a serial murderer. You know what I mean?
Yes.
How does the psyche go so askew? So because, because my ex was a malignant narcissist, with probably a little dash of, you know, psychosis and an addict and all these other things thrown in, there is no cookie cutter solution.
Right.
But in our society, you still can't discuss mental illness without there being shame. And it's very similar to the way alcoholism used to be years and years ago. You know, somebody some suburban woman living in her nice home and goes to church every Sunday, dresses beautifully, has a perfect family. Everybody thinks she's fine, and she's not. And same
she's
for
not.
Her husband. And it's where people could talk about these things and not worry about, you know, sometimes still, if you get mental health help, you may not be renewed on your insurance coverage and stuff. I mean, it's really terrible. And the courts aren't recognizing the mental illness factor. I mean, this whole generation of kids, I just feel really sorry for them.
We're kind of starting to run out of time here, so I want to bring us back to where our focus for this series is healing from abuse. So you both have had experiences of being seriously abused.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know I'll start with Valerie, and then we're going to go to Melanie, and then we're going to probably end the show right after that. So I want to start and ask, how do you think that you can heal, that your children can heal, and then obviously you're going to take the next step of standing up in the public forum and saying, this is what we need to do. Where do you start? Valerie, I want you to start with this conversation. Where do you start with your healing and for your children? And then where do you see this going for yourself?
For me, where I started to feel better is, one, deciding that you want to feel better. Having some knowledge that there is a better way to feel than this bad, you know, whatever is going on. Number two is finding ways to do, knowing that I'm loved, and that has to start with loving myself enough.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start doing things for yourself that are good for you and deliberately staying away from the things that you know are not good for you, it's just self-perpetuating. To a degree. I mean, it's a lot of reading. It's a lot of doing this and talking about it and not keeping it in the closet, but, moving forward. And the kids see it, too. They see positive moving forward direction. A friend of mine had said at the beginning of all this, I said, we need to look at the one day at a time philosophy. It's impossible because sometimes it doesn't feel like you're going to feel better in 15 minutes. You know,
right.
And I said, well, that's
right.
When you need to close your eyes and think, just I'm going to do the next right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the next right thing has been kind of the overriding force here, if that makes sense.
Okay. And what do you see as, are you going to be taking any kind of action or becoming a public force or what?
I don't know. Right now there's so many people to talk. So many people need to talk about it right now. And I think that it really helps a lot when you hook up with someone else and that they know that they're not alone, because this is a very isolating type of situation to be in.
really
so
is.
Is there a group in your area that anybody who's listening from that area could potentially become part of?
I'm not sure. I'm really
okay.
Not.
All right. That's all right. I'm going to ask Melanie about that too. So.
Okay.
Well, Valerie,
thank you
very much for calling in and for all of your insights and your input. And now
thank
I'm going
you
to
very much both of you.
Okay.
Thanks, Val.
Bye-bye.
And bye.
So, Melanie, now I'm going to ask you the same questions of how can you heal? How have you been able to help your children to heal? And you've obviously become an activist in this area. So, but are there also support groups, whether they're online or in localities, where people can go to help heal?
Well, how you first heal is that you lay everything out on the carpet and you untwist it and you peel it away for what it is. So you get to the truth.
How do you do that? I hear the words you're saying, but I mm-hmm. don't know what you mean. How do you do that?
How do you do that? Well, a lot is through therapy. A lot is through reading what is out there. A lot
okay.
is through discovering and self-assessing,
okay.
looking in the mirror at your own actions,
okay.
which you have to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you strike up a goal plan, and that is meditation, eating right. So first you have to get your mindset, because dealing with complex PTSD is nothing short of insanity, because you literally are perpetually stuck in bombs that go off, the war zones that
mm-hmm.
that have happened to you. And to be able to stop that, you have to be able to really train your mind to focus on meditation and calming practices.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a wealth of information, whether it's sound therapy or, you know, acupuncture, if those that can afford it. But there's a lot of free stuff out there. And then there is Al-Anon, which is a help. They don't really talk about alcoholics in Al-Anon. They talk about basically healing yourself. So it's
okay.
not really the group that, you know, is Al-Anon, which is based on alcoholism, is really based on focusing on you so you can become strong and set those boundaries. Now, how you heal your kids is you continue to talk to them and you continue to hold them accountable for their own health, as well as, you know, making sure that they're given some slack to heal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what has to happen. And then once the mind takes off and you're able to function and give yourself a break and not be so hard on yourself, you start to take care of the body. And the body is nutrition and exercise, yoga, those types of things. And it's not an overnight process, because massive depression and complex PTSD is an unbearable condition. Unbearable. Some people can never heal. You hear of veterans having this. No,
mm-hmm.
it's not the only people. It's anybody who's ever faced a traumatic shock, and it just depends on the person's psyche. Someone could get into a car accident, and they, you know, will have complex PTSD. So those are the steps, and you reach out to the people that want to listen and share. Not the ones that want to dominate, but want to listen and share. And there is a community out there. And we are creating one. And City Gal will not let this rest. We will not, because it is a pandemic, period.
Okay, so are there groups in, I mean, you said Al-Anon, but are there other support groups specifically for this?
Really, as Valerie said, this is just not coming out because there's so much shame, and then nobody really wants to look in the mirror at their own actions and
well,
how
yeah.
they treat people.
Yeah.
We have a world of covert bullies out there, and everybody's power struggling rather than learning what real boundaries are, what ethics are, and what they owe themselves and what they, you know, owe life. So we have a battle, because this is not really prevalent. It's just not talked about. Emotional violence, which is the worst form of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to get the word out there, and we definitely will be forming groups in City Gal, and hopefully Valerie can start to form a support group and people can start coming out
mm-hmm.
and just talking about it and learning how to self-heal and what boundaries are for them, for themselves, And it's gotta be neighbor to neighbor help. And
now,
there is no other help. Yeah.
Okay. The Ophelia project that you talked about, is that a type of support system for people, or is that something different?
It is. What they do is they come and they teach what relational aggression is, what bullying is, and how not to bully. So they do definitely have the programs out there. But once again, all of these charities, they're so scattered, and they're not in your own community.
Right.
They're national groups. We need to form community. And once we form community and people can, you know, not be, even the abusers, not be held up and go, oh, you're so evil.
Mm-hmm.
These people don't know they're evil.
Right.
We have to teach them what kindness is, what boundaries are. They don't know they're evil.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't do that. We cannot continue to punish abusers, and we cannot continue to punish victims. We just have to learn what boundaries are, what healing is, what a deep sense of love means. And that's going to take some time, because people want to hide behind their picket fences.
Right, right. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that? Do you have a Facebook page? Do you have a website?
My
how do
Facebook
they contact
page,
you?
My City Gal page, or my City Gal website page. Contact me. I'm here to
CityGalMagazine.com, is that right?
It is. CityGal, CityGal magazine.com. And just email me there, and I will be happy to get you the resources in your own community. I want to do mention about therapy. You can walk into therapy and come out more screwed up than when you came in.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand, when going to therapy, what style of therapist to pick, what therapists are good, and how to ask the right questions. Because like with any professional field, healing or otherwise, medical or otherwise, teachers or otherwise, there are so many screwed up concepts out there.
So how do you find out? How do you find out who's going to be good or not, or appropriate for you?
Appropriate, there's definitely Google, because they'll show you the signs of a good therapist and the signs of not. And how I can say, therapists are like mind chiropractors. And they don't tell you much about themselves, and they talk very little. They draw you out, and they use keywords to twist your thought process into a healthy way. I call them Vulcans, as in Star Trek. They visit your planet, but they don't leave much residue. So you have to come to the conclusion of what is healthy and what is not. Because otherwise, if they tell you what's right and what's not, that's not going to work for you, because that doesn't teach you anything. So those are the best. And those that don't condemn the abuser, truthfully, are the best. Because Scott was never shamed, never told he was awful.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, is it working for you? Are you really doing the right thing by your family? You need to assess that for yourself. So he was never condemned. Well, okay, our therapist did lose his mind once. And, you know, he did. But, you know, because he's only human. And when you see such covert cruelty, it's very, very hard to sit back. Especially when you yourself understand that this is just so detrimental to your family's health. So you really
If a therapist or someone else is teaching you self-responsibility, then chances are that's going to be one of the healthiest therapists to be with, right?
Correct. Without
and it's
blame
not
or shame.
Only, right. So self-responsibility for you and for your spouse or whoever the abuser is in your...
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
That's good.
If you walk into a therapist's office with your wife and your husband and say the wife cheated, and the therapist is condemning the wife for cheating, you better walk out.
Okay. All right.
So, because there's no blame, there is no shame, there is what is. They talk about the behavior. They do not talk about your soul.
Good. Good.
So,
all right. Yeah. Well, Melanie, do you have any last pithy comments that you want to make?
No, it's just been an honor, and it's an honor to be, you know, pulling this out into the light, and I am very proud of my husband, no matter what happens between us, if this works or if this doesn't, for actually having the courage to come out and step forward and say, God, I did this to my family,
mm-hmm.
and this is really tough. So I'm really extremely proud of him, and I'm proud of my family. We're not mm-hmm. hiding behind any cloaks of picket fences of how perfect we are, because
right.
I'm sorry. Nobody, you know, this is all new. This is all mm-hmm. new to us.
Right.
This is all new.
Does take courage. It takes a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. And your children are courageous as well.
Oh, they're
fascinating. They have to be mm-hmm. because when mom and dad are being courageous and coming out with stuff like this, the children have no choice but to work with
yeah.
you and find their own courage.
We're in family mm-hmm. therapy, yeah. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a family dynamic, and everybody plays a role. And,
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't change this horror for anything. It has made me who I am. It has made me so strong, and I am really one of the lucky ones, because most men or women that do this to their family, they hit and run. There's nothing
mm-hmm.
wrong with them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we are very, very lucky, and I will not cross the universe. I will continue to share my story and help those that are suffering and those that are abusing.
Now, you have a book that you're writing. How close
yes.
is that to being published?
Most likely next fall, but usually how that goes,
okay.
they take it and they edit it and they mess it around. And, yeah, because what happened to me is so shocking, and what is so shocking about the whole thing is that people want to call people evil. And anybody who has done anything behaviorally evil doesn't think they're evil.
Wow.
So there's so many facets to this, this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it should really, really help men and women before they make that step to get married and put innocent children in the crossfire, because love drunk does not mean happily ever after. And that's how marriages and relationships start out.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Right.
So love is really hanging in there when the times get tough and learning how to respect yourself and your responsibilities, take responsibility for your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there's no marriage that's going to ride off into the sunset. I don't know any marriage that's not hit major bumps.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's how you can face each other to really take responsibility for yourself. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's important too. Cindy just brought up a point. It's very important to recognize that whatever the path that you are on is bringing you where you are today. And that whether it's bad
yeah.
or good, it's part of who you are, and you've learned from it and become hopefully a better person as a result, just
mm-hmm.
like you're talking about what's happened with you and how Scott is making changes. It's important for all of us to remember that our path has bumps, and we trip and fall, and we get up and go on again.
Well, my greatest teachers haven't been the ones that have, you know, been kind to me or opened doors for me, because
yeah.
I've done the same for them. My greatest teachers have been the ones that have harmed me.
Yeah. Yes. I know that one, too. Yeah, I think we all do. Well,
yeah.
Melanie, thank you very much for being with us today, and I hope you'll join us in the Facebook group after the show here, because apparently the conversation has been rocking right along. So you and Valerie both come back to the conversation there on Facebook. And
I would love to.
Great. Great.
And
so,
would love to, in the future, help out again. So
great. That would be awesome.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Melanie. And
all
thank
right,
you, Valerie,
care.
For joining us, too. And thank you to Cindy for being such a wonderful facilitator. And we are going to remember that. I'll just do this real quick. We're going to remember that you can connect with Melanie at citygalmagazine.com or on her Facebook page. You can connect with me. My email is jan@purpledoc.com. And you can also find me on janrevel.com, as well as on Facebook, obviously. And our theme song, I Am Who I Am, is by the group True Trinity. You can find them at truetrinity.com. I want to there's two things that I want to let you know about. One is that obviously this is the third in this series of healing from abuse. So be sure to join us next week. It continues next week. And I'll be announcing the speaker pretty soon. And we have some other speakers who are also already lined up for this series. And the other thing is to let you know that I'm offering angel readings or oracle card readings that 50% of the purchase price goes to a friend who has been having some very serious financial situations. And it also has to do with this, an abusive relationship and going to court and needing money for an attorney. So I've made the commitment to help her out. So I'm doing these readings, and 50% of it goes to her. So go to purposetalkradio.com/readings, or just click on the readings tab there, and it will take you into it, and you can order a reading, and it will go to benefit my friend. So I believe that's it. I want to say thank you to you all for being here this week, and I wish you soul blessings. Talk to you next week.
I am me, I am who I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.